You can have that countdown.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm just tapping into your system. That's all. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you. Well, I'm going to mute the call out, so we'll get started.
Well, don't go anywhere. I need you.
No, I'm here. I'll be here.
Oh, okay.
You have been muted. To unmute yourself, press the star key twice. Mute.
Okay, well, good morning. Good afternoon to those on the East Coast, and welcome to our daily quantum energy information and education call. Each day, 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, we come and we have different topics. The goal, the object of this call is to educate. We share and we talk about different topics, everything from quantum energy to health and wellness to extraterrestrials. You name it, we talk about it. We have Russ Johnson on today. He's a noted radio announcer from many, many years, and he is here today with us. And oftentimes he brings Jillian Green. I'm not sure what she's going to be with us today, but Russ himself, okay, great. Well, Russ himself is a treasure chest of knowledge on various topics. So I'm going to just turn it over to you, Russ, and let you take it away.
All right. Okay. Good morning. Yeah. I might talk about my background just a little bit, not much. Let me start this way. I got about 10,000. I'm not going to talk about aliens. We'll leave the aliens alone. I'm waiting for Jillian to come back with me with the alien part. But I want to talk about people just trying to find themselves, you know, people who are looking to achieve and accomplish great things the minute or the 2 minutes or 3 minutes that we have here on Earth. And so I like to start with a piano in the background.
In the quiet crucible of our personal, private sufferings, that our noblest dreams are born, and our greatest gifts are given, and often given in compensation for what we've been through. It is in the quiet crucible of our personal, private sufferings that our noblest dreams are born, and our greatest gifts are given, and often given in compensation for what we have been through.
And there are some people who have been on this planet for a minute or two who have been through a lot. And we want to recognize some of those people just briefly as we talk about a number of subjects, a number of things we should be thinking about to survive and coming into a new world. And it's going to be much bigger than most of us have thought about past, because most of us on the planet, including me, I thought that being on this planet and going through the trials and tribulations and challenges of my lifetime, that we had black people, we had white people, the Asians, Spanish people. That was it. That's all I thought about all of my life. I didn't know. In many instances, there was the other people in the vastness of the billions and billions and trillions of planets in the universe who also are interested in this planet and are coming here. But let's talk about this planet, and let's talk about the people who have paid a price to be here today and some of the challenges that you have gone through. I don't know, many people know about Black Wall Street that happened in 1921. Black Wall Street. And then another one was Rosewood, Florida, that happened in 1923. And then I can go back to Wilmington, North Carolina of 1919. But let's do this history just a bit. Black Wall Street, 1921.
On May 31st, 1921, a mob of approximately 2,000 white people assembled outside of the Tulsa courthouse and jail in anticipation of the possible lynching of a black teenager named Dick Rowland, who was accused of assaulting a white woman. a group of 50 to 75 black men arrived at the scene. In hopes of preventing the lynching, a shot was fired. The tension, which had reached an uncontainable level, exploded into one of the worst race riots in American history. A mob of armed whites had invaded Greenwood. By the time order was restored, 2 days later, Black Wall Street had burned to the ground, and the black man that was accused of assaulting the white female elevator operator was acquitted.
By the way, there's a new film coming out called Till. I don't know whether you've seen any preliminary things about that, but it's coming out. It will be out in another month or two. Till, and it goes back to talk about Emmett Till, who went to the South, and you maybe can Google some of that, and you can get that information. I won't address that today because I want to talk about something else. But I play that because that's part of the history of Black America, or the blacks who are in South America, or the blacks who are in Europe, or the blacks who are in Paris now today, you know, or Eastern Europe, or the UK, or Canada, the blacks who have been taken from Africa and dispersed throughout the world. So that's just the reality. I just wanted to address that a bit. It's all called, and it's all in the realm of Black history.
Of accountability. I think to some degree that's encouraging, because I think it shows the sort of rudimentary effort to educate themselves, because I think people haven't had an opportunity to get an anti-racist education. They didn't get it in school. I know I didn't get it in school, and I'm black. I remember my seventh grade history book. I'll never forget this. Had one page on the civil rights movement. I knew that our people were so much greater than that. So what I need for people to do is to not be satisfied with the minor steps that they've made in these first few weeks.
The next step would be action. So we have to figure out, and when I say we, I mean white people have to figure out all of the ways that racism is showing up in our society that privileges them unfairly, and divest this unearned privilege.
So we're halfway through 2020, and what have we learned? And more importantly, what do we do now?
We have had a 400-year history of oppression, and that is a long time. And that should be unbearable to people whose history is different from that, because we are all here together. We should all be part of the solution.
And there are many people who are white, black, Hispanic, Asian, who are also a part of the solution to the problem, and that's being worked on. As a matter of fact, there's a new book out. If you understand Black History Week, they had a week for it, then they had a month for it. Now we are talking about 360 days of Black history. And Dr. Milton, Walter Milton, if you will, he and Dr. Joel Friedman have together a book. It's about 1,300 pages. It has QR codes. It's phenomenal. All you have to do is go to B as in boy, H as in happy, 365.org, and you will see it. It will pop up. And quite frankly, in my opinion, I think you should order that book, because it covers all of this stuff in Black history from ancient Rome or ancient Egypt, if you will, to now. So it won't go back to... In a way, some of it goes back to the days of the Anunnakis, but that's we won't go into that right now. But it goes through a lot that you need to know in terms of catching up with who you are and what your people have struggled to go through so that you can be here today to enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy today, that we most of us ignore. Voting time is coming up, and you want to vote because people died for the right to go to the ballot box to vote.
What is liberty? Oh, wow. That's quite a question. It's not, I suppose, almost nobody really asks himself that question. Well, I can always quote the Declaration. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And the moment I do that, I'm in trouble again, because Obviously, I was not included in that pronouncement. But they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What is liberty?
And if you don't recognize the voice, that's James Baldwin, and he's gone now. And Fired Next Time is one of the dynamic books that he wrote before he passed on. And he was a prolific writer. He was front and center of the civil rights struggle, the movement here in the United States. And he did a lot to raise the consciousness of the people, you know, the conscious level of the people, so that they knew that we had a problem that needed to be addressed. Even the Martin Luther King and Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth and James Farmer. I mean, we can go right down the history of all of these people, be it, I'm thinking about CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality with Roy Ennis. I'm thinking about the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee with Stokely Carmichael, or the Black Panther Party with, you know, Eldridge Cleaver. I mean, it goes back. The history, we need to know that history, folks, because they paid a serious price for us to be here today so we can enjoy the freedoms and the ability to vote. Now, let's talk about people who have taken advantage of some of those freedoms. Do you know Kathy Hughes? Have you heard of Radio One? Well, there was a young lady when I went to Howard University. I'll date myself. I don't have any problem with that. When I started teaching at Howard University, that was back in 1974, a long time ago, a few years ago. And I was hired to teach broadcast journalism and radio television arena, in that category, in that arena. And so as I got to WHUR as a disc jockey on Friday night and Saturday, playing jazz, real smooth jazz, if you will, that one of the persons on the university campus heard me, and he says, "Hey, I understand, you know, you're doing a great job, and we kind of looking for somebody to teach broadcast journalism." I said, and I had taught the fifth grade and sixth grade way back when, in the 60s. I said, I don't want to teach. But he came back again and again and again and says, "Hey, while you're waiting for a full-time position here at WHUR, why don't you come on and teach at the same time? And you are right on the campus of Howard University, and so you can do both." And so I said, "Okay." And I met this young lady named Kathy Hughes. She was a secretary, by the way. Very attractive lady. And Tony Brown, if you ever heard of the Tony Brown Journal, the big television show that was all over the country, supported by Coca-Cola and other big companies at the commercials. But he was director of the School of Communications at that time, and she was a secretary. She went on from there to become sales manager of WHUR, then general manager of WHUR, and then she went and bought her first radio station in 1980. And guess what? Since she bought WOL, her first radio station, with Dewey Hughes, and if you want to see who Dewey Hughes is, I suggest you go to Netflix and get this motion picture called Talk to Me, with Petey Green and all those guys. But he's in that whole motion picture, and you should see that as part of your historical development of how people have struggled to get to where they are now. But case in point, that young lady who was a secretary then, back then, in 74, she now owns Radio One with her son, about 68 radio stations across the broad spectrum of the United States, and she's worth about $500, $600, maybe $700, $800 million, maybe more. Now, she didn't have a lot of money. Matter of fact, she had probably zero. But this is how she got the radio station. This is one of the reasons, and I'll play just a little bit of she talking about how she got the money to get the first radio station. Now, 68 radio
stations. Storm was evidence to the market that this station had a place.
So
should be here. I start really praying on it, quite frankly, and really analyzing it, and I realized that what I had done at Howard University for WHUR was significant enough for this group of distinguished Washingtonians to double my salary and give me the opportunity to take their money, like I said, although they never came through with their money, okay, but to promise me their money to build a station from the ground up. I said, I think that's a good enough credential for me to take to a bank. So I took it to Chemical Bank of New York.
Wow.
And Chemical Bank of New York loaned me $1 million to buy
WOL. On your signature,
W-O-L.
Basically, right?
On my signature, but I had a little bit of help because my reference was Kay Graham. And I have to honestly tell you that the loan officer at Chemical Bank called me and thanked me for the opportunity of being able to talk to Kay Graham personally. It went past the loan officer to a senior VP at Chemical Bank, and he was so thrilled. He called me and thanked me. He said,
keys to the kingdom.
Right. He said, Miss Hughes, I just want you to know that if I ever write a book, it's going to start off with my day on the phone with Catherine Graham. I cannot believe this. And he's going on and on. And I said, excuse me, sir, does that mean I'm going to get the loan? Oh, hell yes, you're going to get the loan.
When you heard that name.
Right. If I had known, I would have upped the amount of the loan application. Okay. And Mrs. Graham gave me her vote of confidence, and they loaned me $1 million.
Fabulous story.
Okay.
Wonderful.
So that's how. So
then you say, now you got to get a facility.
But wait, I got one more part of the story.
Go ahead.
Okay. The other part of the story was that the lawyer now is mad because he feels that, you know, we caught Egmont Sonderling on his deathbed, which was true. Okay, but he was still functioning.
He wanted to
okay.
do that, right?
All right, and he owed Dewey the favor, okay, seriously. And so he put in a stipulation that we had 30 days to prove that we had the financial wherewithal to buy it and that we had to put $100,000 in escrow that was non-refundable. And at this time, I'm working with Syndicated Communications. Herb Wilkins and Terry Jones are putting together my whole package and getting, because I needed more than $1 million for the station. At that time, remember, you had to prove that you could operate the station, that you had the revenue to operate the station for 1 year in order to get your license approved at the FCC. So you had to have the purchase price and 1 year operating capital. So I didn't have $100,000 that I could put in escrow. Although Chemical Bank is going to give me $1 million, funding's going to come through, but they just don't write you a check when they tell you you've been approved.
No,
you,
it
you
takes a while.
Process. It takes
process.
A while. It's a process. And Dewey grew up in Southwest D.C. with Herb Fame, who at that time was the number one recording artist with Peaches and Herb. They had Shake a Groove Thing and Reunited.
We love Peaches.
Okay, Peaches and Herb. Okay. Herb Fame comes by our apartment to show Dewey an $865,000 royalty check from Shake a Groove Thing and Reunited. I pulled Dewey in the back room and I said, "Ask Herb, can we borrow $100,000 for 30 days?" Terry Jones and Herb Wilkins have said that the first piece of funding should be deposited in our account within 30 days. Dewey's like, "I can't do that. I can't do that." Now, you already made me do Egmont Sonderling. Okay. I was like, "We're almost to the finish line. You got to do it. We got the deal. Now we got to fund the deal."
You can't choke it out,
Dewey. Exactly. You can't choke at the finish line, baby. We got to cross this line. So I went back out in the living room literally dragging my husband like he was a little kid saying, "Herb, Dewey got something to ask you." And Dewey was like, "Well, Herb, I said, we need to borrow $100,000. So he said, "For what?" And I said, "To buy a radio station, WOL. And he said, "Well, let me ask Herb Cohen." Okay. Paul Cohen, I'm sorry. Paul Cohen was the manager of Peaches and Herb and really responsible.
Local guy, Paul,
yeah, Paul Cohen, the Mark IV.
Yeah,
okay, the nightclub, J. Paul's in Georgetown, Georgia Brown's right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's Paul Cohen.
Yeah.
Okay, so Paul Cohen not only managed Peaches and Herb.
Very well. Now
okay,
I know
no, you know Paul. Paul Cohen not only managed Peaches and Herb, he was married to Peaches. Okay, all right.
Then he married a doctor.
Linda Green, okay, was Peaches' real name. So Herb got Paul on the phone And Paul said, okay, Linda and I'll put up $50,000 and you put up the other $50,000. And we'll loan them $100,000 to buy WOL. Because, again, Paul Cohen, being in the nightclub business all those years, realized the value of WOL.
Ooh.
So they that
so
same
basically
day.
Basically, still on your signature, you didn't have anything to put up.
No, nope.
You had no equity.
Nope.
So you got your signature.
Once again.
You're going to have the equity, but it's not arrived yet.
Exactly. So within like 2.5, not even 3 weeks, my funding came through. And I took the $100,000 back to Herb Fame for him and Peaches and Paul Cohen and said, how much interest do I owe you? And Herb said, shoo, I was sweating every night. I haven't been to sleep since we gave you this money. We don't want any interest. Okay, we just want that cashier's check for $100,000 back. And I said, well, at least let me, you know, show our gratitude. Let me give you a part of my, you know, radio station.
Ooh.
Okay? And he said, no, we don't want anything. We don't want anything. We just want the money back. And so I said, are you sure? I said, ask Paul. Paul said, no, we're happy we could do it. Okay? Peaches said, no. To this day, all three of them say that that was the dumbest day of their life.
Believe me. Oh, Kathy.
Because I was trying to give them, okay, and I didn't know. I had never owned. I was going to give them 10%. Okay.
Okay. That's a big chunk.
I had no idea. Okay.
Yeah, but she now owns 78 radio stations, and 10% of... $800 million would be what? No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Anyway, so they turned it down. But listen, I did that because now we're talking about a new day for you, many of you. I've been around 10,000 years, but you guys just got here. Okay. So now you got to get into position to be the owners and the captains of industry in this country. You got to do like, If I may take a name or two, Ray Kroc, who was absolutely broke when he started McDonald's franchise. And rather to me to go through that history, why don't you go to Netflix and watch the motion picture. What was that motion picture? Jesus Christ. But Ray Kroc. The McDonald's story. But anyway, just possibly look for the McDonald's story. And I'll come up with that name in a few minutes. But you got to watch that motion picture, because in that motion picture, it gives you the technique, the strategy, the skill set, the mindset of what he did to take it from the McDonald's boys, put it in his name, and become a multi-millionaire. And because of his vision, see, if people have it, like Helen Keller says, there are a lot of people who have vision, who have sight but no vision, right? You got to have vision if you're going to be an entrepreneur. Look, I do it this way. I remember another guy, Rich DeVos of Amway fame, and he says a poem, and I'll just repeat this. I'm going to call upon somebody else. I'm calling upon Nate in a few minutes for his story. But he has a poem that he, Rich DeVos and Jay Van Andel, back in 1959, decided to start Amway Corporation. And all they had was an idea, because they had worked with Nutrilite, a company. They were distributors, and they worked in the field, knocking on doors, selling, you know, vitamins and minerals. But they say, let's break away and start our own company. And they started with soap. That was the only first and only product they started with, soap. And now that both of them are gone now, but Amway Corporation now does, it, out of all the network marketing companies in the world, there are many, 3,000 more, 5,000. Every day I get a call about a new one. But out of all of them, Amway is still the number one producing network marketing company in the world, doing $8, $10, $12 billion a year consistently. But here's a point. that I never forget. That was an Amway distributor back way back 40 some years ago. And that's the first company I started when I started in network marketing. But I've been in hundreds of the things since that time. But anyway, here's a poem. He says, when a person has seen the light or has been possessed by a dream or captured by an ideal, that person must not rest until that dream or ideal can be shared with others. One dare not hold the dream alone, or it will disappear as dewdrops in the sunlight. Now, the sharing of dreams and ideals can be a very lonely business, and a few blessed souls have to plead with the crowd to look up to the light or to tune their ears to the voices of angels, for the light is always shining and the angels are always singing, and only human limitations causes us to miss them. God bless those men and women who do see the light or who do hear those angelic sounds and who dare to call others to share the blessings. That's what Kathy saw, a secretary at Howard University, and became a sales manager, general manager, and then decided a bright idea of to buy her own radio station with no money, zero, her and Dewey Hughes, but a lot of experience. So go to Netflix and watch the motion picture, Talk to Me. Excellent motion picture. Reminds me of Madam C.J. Walker and her motion picture that she had out not too long ago. I can't think of the name of that one anyway. But somebody will tell me in a minute. So all I'm saying to you, it's time for us to think differently, because what you think about, you bring about. What you have vision and you see and you charge toward it, you can bring it to you, right? Jesus said, what did he say? In John 14:12, all the things I have done, you can do and more. And I can, because I got to go unto my Father, but you can do these things. Look, even Farrakhan says, you're waiting too long to get a piece of the action. He just says it this way.
In the 20-year anniversary of the March on Washington, the cry was, jobs and justice. Mm-hmm. That's right. We are now in 2010.
And,
and what is the cry?
Jobs and justice.
Well, wait a minute. How long are you going to sit around begging white people to do for us what we have the power to do for ourselves?
What you think about, you bring about. You can do this thing. Look, my background is this, and I'm going to call upon Nate because Nate has a story too, because I don't want to take up all the time. It's now, I've been talking for a half an hour. But my background is having more than 30 years in broadcasting, working in Baltimore with WITH, WBJC, WEBB, WSID, WEAA, and having been a newscaster on WBAL-TV11 back years ago with Oprah. She was at WJZ-TV13 at the same time I was at WBAL-TV11. She stayed with the broadcast industry. I went on and got my BA, MA, PhD and started teaching at Howard University as a university professor. She stayed in the cul-de-sac of broadcasting, and today she's worth $3 billion. Did you understand that? In Washington, D.C., I worked at WHUR, and for a short time, I was acting general manager of WPFW. At Howard University, I was general manager of WHUR. I was also assistant professor of communications at Antioch, Howard University, Morgan State University. I have a BA, MA, PhD in communications. And when I got my dissertation, I was working with National Public Radio, director of special interest programs for National Public Radio. And I wrote my dissertation on the analysis of public broadcasting's administration policy and program development. Now, for more important today, importantly, if you will, for today's discussion, I've been in network marketing for the last 45 years. Amway, Shackley, Herbalife, New Skin, another 100 companies out there, A.L. Williams, Prime America, you name it. Fumbling, stumbling, falling on my face 1,000 times until I got lucky and got into prepaid legal. And when I joined, my wife and I at the time, We both of us were absolutely incredibly broke. Couldn't even pay the rent. Had to go to my pastor to borrow $600 to pay the rent. And he said, Russell, you need to go get a job instead of running around with this network marketing stuff. And I said, all right. So I went down to Fox Chevrolet and got a job as a car salesman for the next 2 years. Okay? You understand that? A struggle. I've had many jobs. I don't want to, I would take another 30 minutes to tell you how many jobs I've had in Baltimore alone. At least 50. How's that? Jobs. You know. But anyway, I can go through that one of these days. But I'm saying that we have to get up and we have to do something about our lives. And we can't sit down and wait for somebody to do it for us. Jobs and justice. Let's get up and become captains of the industry. It's open for you. The opportunity is here. It's available. And then some people say, I don't know. You know, you talk about Ray Kroc. You talk about Kathy Hughes. You talk about these people, or Edison, or Andrew Carnegie. You got these people. They stumbled and they struggled. Yeah. But it's not the critic who counts, nor the man who points out how the strong man stumbled, nor where the doer of deeds could have done better. The critic belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by sweat, dust, and blood, and who strives valiantly, who makes an error, and he comes short again and again and again and again. But guess what? In the end, he knows the great enthusiasms and devotions while spending himself in a worthy cause, and who at best, at the end of his life, knows the triumph of high achievement. And at worst, if he fails, guess what? He fails while daring greatly. So his place shall never be among those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. Martin Luther King says, get up, do it, make it happen. And I call upon you to get up and make it happen. Racism, yeah, it's there.
Anybody that's watching this has to read this book. On tyranny, 20 things that we've learned over the last 100 years in this country that have put us in the position we're in now and what we can do about it. Everybody has to read this book. They should read this book first, and then they should read The Myth of Race by Robert Wald Sussman. And once you've read The Myth of Race, you will never, ever again go along with the idea that there are 3 or 4 or 5 different races. It was a lie made up by the people who ran the Spanish Inquisition. And before that, there were different colors, but race had nothing to do. There was only one race, the human race. We made that whole thing up. It's time to get rid of it. We have the power to do that. This country got ready for World War II in about 6 months. And you're telling me that we can't destroy racism? White people created racism. Anything you create, you can destroy. If God created human beings, the human race, and they started out black women. White people created racism. Human beings created racism. It's time to get over it.
Now, if you don't know who that is, that's Jane Elliott. She's a white lady. And she's on the stump talking about, listen, we got to change things. We got to get up and make things happen. But you have to know your history. You got to know who you are. You got to know where you came from, and you got to have the right attitude. And I close with this as I bring on Nate, because I want him to talk about his experiences in network marketing. I've been in network marketing 45 years, as I said earlier. I've been lucky enough, because I stayed long enough to make millions and millions of dollars doing this kind of business, the selling soap, if you will. But anyway. But if you have the right attitude, and I go to the poem on attitude, it says, the longer I live, the more I've realized the impact of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important than facts. It's more important than the past, than education, than money, than circumstances, than failures or successes, than what other people think, do, or say. It is more important than appearances and more important than skills. As a matter of fact, it will make or break a company, a church, a home. But the remarkable thing is that we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we embrace for the day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that some people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play upon the one string that we have, and that is our attitude. I am convinced that life is 10% of what happens to me and 90% of how I react to it. And so it is with you. We are in charge of our attitude. And when we get up in the morning, we have to have an attitude of gratitude. Nathan, I'm grateful that you asked me to speak for a minute today. I was going to talk about the alien agenda, but I decided to do it a little bit differently. And the next time you invite me, I'll bring back Jillian, and she'll talk about the alien agenda. How's that? Nate, you're on. Thank you very much.
Oh, before Nate, hold up, Nate. We're going to let Dr. Johnson off this evening, right? Dr. Johnson, as a professor, how at University of King David is?
Well, okay. I appreciate that. When I was at Howard University, and I joined when I was at Howard, by the way. I had been at Howard about 7 or 8 years because I joined about 78. But I was at a bar, a cold one, and a guy came up to me and said, "Hey, your friend, the young lady around the corner, she's in some kind of business." I said, "Oh, yeah, okay." So I went around the house, knocked on the door, and say, "Hey, listen, I need to talk to you. I understand you're in some kind of business." She says, "Yeah, but I don't have time to talk to you now. But here are a few tapes." I took the tapes home, listened to them, came back the next day, about five hours of tapes, gave them back to her, and joined her with Amway Corporation back in the day. That was in 1978. Became a direct distributor and got a free trip to Ada, Michigan in 1980, my wife and I, because we reached the position of a direct distributorship. That means you're doing pretty good. That's the first step to be able to get a free vacation, if you're on the for Amway Corporation. But he asked me why, because even though I had many jobs in Baltimore, tons of jobs, driving a cab, sweeping floors on the assembly line, the whole nine yards. I can go through all the jobs. I had more than 50 jobs. But I was always looking for something that I could be in charge of, so to speak. I didn't want to do the time clock for another 50 years. So I joined network marketing, and I've been in network marketing now for 45 years. And I've had some successes. I made some millions of dollars. And I've written a couple books. One of the books that you might want to look at, you go to myhistorypage.com, and you'll see me a little bit about what I've been doing. But go to the bottom and you can put your email in it, and the book will come up. You can either download the book or you can read it online. That's my last book, The 21-Day Challenge, meaning that in 21 days, you can be on the road to making $10,000 a month or $10,000 a week or $10,000 a day. As some have done it, like when I think about Horton Bugs, and David knows who I'm talking. So there are people now making $10,000 a month or $10,000 a week or $10,000 a day or more. Network marketing does work. And the other thing I would say, David, that I would tell people to go Google Eric Worre, W-O-R-R-E, and look at a tape that he has written called, what was that tape? David, remember the tape he put out there? Just go to Eric Worre, and the tape will come up. It's a tape dealing with network marketing, and it's one of the best tapes. Rise of the Entrepreneur, if you will. An excellent, excellent, excellent tape. So back to you, David. Nate?
Okay. You're not off the hook yet. We're going to have some more fun with you. We love you.
But do you remember that tape, the movie?
We got Rise and Eric Worre recruiting in network marketing.
Rise
is free. They can go to YouTube.
Yeah. Google that.
If they haven't taken it down, they can watch it for free. Rise of the Entrepreneur.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. You're right. Go ahead, David. What else?
Now, your formula, when you really started working it, what did you do? 365 days in a year, what did you do with your consistency?
Okay, excellent. Look, I had been in network marketing. I went to Amway, Shackley, Herbalife, New Skin, and some other companies, right? Many others, your way, my way, his way, anybody's way. But I would always move around, but I didn't hear. Like some people have ears to hear, but they can't hear, and it won't get into the core of the spirit until one day I came into prepaid legal, which is 94, and the guy says, and the guy Dave Cibola, he had introduced me to it, and he says, he had been in the company 18 months. And in 18 months, he's making $33,000 a month. So he says, I said, how do you do that? He says, I talk to two persons every day. I introduce myself. I do the presentation. I show them the product. Then I show them the compensation plan. And then I ask for participation. Two a day. And I said, now what else? He said, that's it. I said, come on, Dave. He said, I do that. I do two a day and one a week. I said, what's the one a week? He said, I'd have all those people I introduced to the prisoners to come back and see, take a second a look or a third look, whatever, wherever they are. I said, so two a day, one a week. And I said, and you're making $33,000 a month. Now he went on to make $1 million a year. But anyway, so I said, okay, if that's true, then this is 94, summer of 94. 1 year later, I was making $10,000 a month using his formula. How many people did I talk to? I went out and talked to 766 persons one-on-one in that 12-month period of time. 766. And I got every name, I got every date, and telephone number of all the people I talked to. Now, I'm not a salesman, a knockdown, drag-out salesman like some of those car salesmen. And they're good people. I've done that too. I used to sell cars for a couple of years. But I used that formula. And even the days I didn't feel like going out, I found at least two persons that I would go up to, whether it be in a King or McDonald's, wherever I met them, on the street, wherever I met them. And I would do my presentation. And I was just the meet and greet, you know, you meet the person, hey, it's snowing today. Yeah. Oh yeah. I see it's snowing out. What do you think the weather's going to be? Well, I don't know. I think it's going to be pretty cold. Okay. Yeah. Well, let me button up. Hey, what do you do for a living? I mean, you look like you're pretty successful. Well, I'm a post office. I work at the post office. Wow. That's a good job. I used to be with Social Security Administration years ago. So you're making a lot of money. I could do better. Well, okay, so you like your job? Well, it's all right. It pays the bills. So, well, I'm in network marketing, and I'm working for myself from home. So let me take a minute. Here's a brochure of some people have a tape, but I used to get, I've always carried my brochure. Here's a brochure of what the benefits, 1 through 5, the benefits, and here's how I make some money. And this is how much they pay per minute, da, da, da. So I would do the meeting in 15 minutes, that's all. And when I called somebody, I did what Dave Cibola told me. He said, listen, when you call a person, be excited, be enthusiastic, right? And you say, hey, listen, John, Russ here. Hey, what's happening? Hey, I found something. What do you mean? I got a way that we can make a ton of money. Are you interested in money? Of course, man, come on. All right, listen, I need 15 minutes of your time. Now, you may or may not see what I'm talking about, but I got to show you what I'm talking about. Now, when can I get with you? Well, you know, I'm kind of, listen, 15 minutes. We're talking about changing your future. We're talking about making serious money, $10,000 a week, $10,000 a month, or $10,000 a day. Oh, come on, it must be illegal. Nope. Let me show you what I'm talking about. So I sit with that person and show them for 15 minutes the plan. That's what I did for 766 presentations until I got to $10,000 a month. After 12 months, it took me 12 months to get there. But after 12 months, I was making $10,000 a month. And since then, I've made, you know, several millions of dollars, even with prepaid legal. So that's it, David.
Okay, one college, or I have to put the rewind, but you said one college was teaching network marketing. Which college was that?
Bethany College in, I think that's in, just put Bethany, like spelled B-E-T-H-A-N-Y, Bethany College. They have a degree in network marketing. They have a BA degree in network marketing. I think that's in Tennessee or somewhere like that. But it'll come up if you just Google it.
Okay, I believe you helped a lot of people out just now on the line.
Well, if anybody needs to talk to me, again, go to myhistorypage.com. My phone number's there, a little history about me. And if you go down to the bottom, you can even read the book that I wrote, the last book I wrote about network marketing. It's called The 21-Day Challenge. You can read it online or you can download it. Now, what I wanted to do, because I was with A.L. Williams too back in the 80s, you know, and I became a regional vice president, which is, you know, a challenge. But Nate was one of the first persons who saw the picture of Prime America, of A.L. Williams, the whole deal. He was there at the beginning when Art Williams was making very little or no money. Now he's a billionaire. But Nate, talk to the people about your experience in terms of network marketing and what you see and what the possibilities are for them in this year of 2022. Nate?
Okay, yeah, I'm here. Yeah, as you said, Russ, I had a long history in network marketing. When you mentioned Amway, before I get to A.L. Williams part, it reminds me of one of the first meetings I went to in Amway. And at that time, doctors, as they still do today, doctors make a lot of money. And one of the guys that was at the meeting, you know, Amway would kind of trick people. I say trick people coming to meetings. Say, you know, I found a business opportunity and I think you'd be ideal for it. The person who introduced me to it is in town. I wanted to take you to a meeting. And they use all kind of tactics, covert and overt tactics to get you to meetings. So anyway, this guy was at one of the big meetings they had, and he was a doctor. And he said, yeah, I'd be, you know, I'm of course interested in making money. He said, well, I'm a doctor. I make $350,000 a year. And the guy from Amway looked at him. He said, oh yeah, you're a doctor and then you make $350,000 a year. He said, oh my God, you mean it takes you a whole year to make $350,000? And the doctor, you know, he kind of let some of the air out of his chest because he had his chest out. He says, I make $350,000 a year. And the guy says, oh, it takes you a whole year to make $350,000? Because this guy was making $300,000 a month.
Yeah.
So it gives you an unlimited possibility. And the possibility is whatever is within you. Like on Thursday, we do affirmations. And, you know, we teach and kind of share with people that you can get wherever you want to go if you'll make that your objective, your goal, make it your affirmation. Because if you affirm what it is you want to do, affirm what it is you want to be or where you want to go, the way your consciousness is, the way the universe is, the way your mind is that it does everything it can to get you there. So if you say, I'm going to be a billionaire, your consciousness, the universe that surrounds you, is going to do everything it can do to push you there. Because the mind is like a genie, and we have genie that's part of our group, and sometimes she kids and say, your wish is my command. But that's the way your mind is. It says whatever you wish, whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, man can achieve. Why is that? That's because that's what's built within you. So when I met Art Williams back in the day, I was working with a company called Waddell and Reed. And Art Williams was the division manager of Waddell & Reed, Southeast Waddell & Reed. And I was fortunate enough at that time, I didn't realize, I was fortunate to have gotten a job, became an agent with Waddell & Reed. I had a stockbroker's license. I had actually worked with E.F. Hutton. And then I went to work for Waddell & Reed, and I had an insurance license. And Waddell & Reed was a company that actually had mutual funds. And so I used my securities license to market at mutual funds. But the insurance was the thing that was paying the really big money at that time. So when I went to work with Waddell & Reed under Art Williams, who was our regional vice president, I immediately started sharing the opportunity with people. And I wasn't I wasn't a manager. I wasn't anything. I was just excited. You know, I was excited to be able to show people how they could buy term insurance and they could take the difference that they was paying and save it up and create a nest egg for themselves instead of creating a nest egg for the insurance company. And as a result, I brought like 10 people into the company. Now, we didn't have a referral system or anything. I just introduced them and got excited. So Art, that got Art's attention. So Art called me in the office one day and said, Nate, I'm going to make you a sales manager. And I said, I thought you had to be in the company for at least a year to become a sales manager. I'd only been there like 2 months. He says, and you know, he was what we call him, a deep South Southern boy. He said, well, dadgummit, Nate, I'm going to make you a manager. I don't care what they say. So he made me a manager. And before the end of that first year, I became a district manager. My district became the number one district in the country with Waddell & Reed. So Art called me again into the office. He said, Nate, you know, you're doing a great job. Your district is number one in the country. And he said, you're making about $35,000 a year. Now, back in that day, $35,000 is probably at least equivalent to maybe $150,000 today, which is decent money. He said, you're making about $35,000 a year. He said, but I don't think, and I'm going to use his intonation in talking because he was, again, a deep South Southern boy. He said, well, that ain't right. I said, it ain't right. What do you mean it's not right? I'm making $35,000 a year. And to me, I was excited because that was a lot of money back in that day. He said, well, I'm going to just tell you the truth. The guy who was my division manager was a guy by the name of, Rusty Crossland was one, and Bobby Buson, that was Bobby that was the division manager. Bobby Buson was division manager. So he said, Bobby makes $35,000 override from you. He says, I make about $35,000 override from you. He said, now, you're the one doing the work, and we're making as much as you make. And again, using his vernacular, he said, that ain't right. He said, so I'm going to go up to Waddell & Reed, and I'm going to talk to him about it and tell them they need to change the compensation plan because their plan stinks. That's what he said. He said, if you're doing the work, you should make the money. You should be making at least $100,000. That way you can get out and bring in more people instead of you leading your team, and you're the biggest producer on your team, and you're still building a team. So he went to Waddell & Reed. He talked to them about changing the comp plan. They said no. So again, it was one of those meetings I would always call me to. Art called me back to another meeting and said, well, Nate, I talked to Waddell & Reed, and they're not going to change that comp plan. And he said, I just don't want to be a part of it anymore because it's just not fair that the people at the bottom have to work so hard and the people at the top get all the money. It kind of sounds like the world, doesn't it? But anyway, he said it wasn't fair. So he said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start my own company. And I want you, Bobby, there was a lady there by the name of Virginia Carter. There was Rusty Crossland. There was those that have been involved in A.L. Williams, the names I'm talking about, these are legends in that company. Anyway, he called us to a meeting one day and he said, I'm going to start my own company because Waddell & Reed, I just don't agree with their compensation plan. I don't know what I'm going to call it. He said, I tell you what, I don't have another name for it. I'm just going to call it A.L. Williams. And he had gotten with a company called American Can and got a contract. It was a master agent contract. Anyway, and so he started off with that, and he asked, it was 13 of us in the room, he asked 13 of us to come with him to start his company. Well, out of that 13, about 7 people went, and the 7 people who went, they probably can't even remember the first $50 million they made because it was just been so long ago. Well, unfortunate for me, I wasn't one of the ones who went, and the reason I didn't, because when I was with Waddell & Reed, I was making $35,000 a year. I went and I started my own agency, and within 3 months, I was already up to $500,000 a year in my own agency. So when Art approached me about starting his company, he said, I love you, Art. You're my boy, but I can't just put aside a $500,000 a year income that I built up in just 3 months to go with you. So he said, well, Nate, I tell you what, will you be a consultant with me? When we do these fast start schools, you know, will you come on stage and talk? We do broadcasts. Will you come on the broadcast and talk? So I did that. So I never really officially went with A.L. Williams as an agent, but I was with him as a consultant. And as a result, Art became a good friend of mine, Bobby Buson. All of us, you know, have been good friends, but I never formally joined. But I made a lot of money from Art because he would pay me well as a consultant. And then I went on from being in the insurance and investment business to become a real estate, you might say, guru, because within a matter of 2 years, I had bought over 200 houses, all no money down. And as a result of that, I met guys like Robert Allen, Dave Delgado, all these guys, Tom Vu. As a matter of fact, with Tom Vu, he was the Vietnamese guy that came over to the United States. And he was even on Johnny Carson's show and several other shows, because the guy overnight became a millionaire, multimillionaire in real estate. Many of you back in the day might even remember him. He would come on, and oftentimes he'd be sitting on a private yacht with beautiful women serving Mai Tais. And there was this other guy with him, which was me. I was on several of his commercials, and we sit around on the yacht, and, you know, those were props, but it was real life him. He was sitting there drinking Mai Tais, and he would say, "Well, I come to America. I know can even speak English, but I get into real estate. If I can do it, so can you. If I can become millionaire, so can you." And that guy became multimillionaire just buying and selling real estate. Again, all these things are dreams. If you can dream it, you can accomplish it. And one of my favorite songs has been by the Gap Band, and earlier Russ spoke about Gap. Well, you got to say he spoke about Gap, but many people don't even know where the Gap name came from. It came from those names of the streets up on Black Wall Street, Greenwood, Appling, I forgot the last one. But anyway, those are the names of the major streets that were in on Black Wall Street. And that song by the Gap Band was "Nothing Comes to Sleepers But a Dream." Many of us, instead of dreaming, we sleep. And when I talk about dreaming, it's having that thought, that motivation, that desire to do something special with your life. And many of us don't do that. You know, we watching football games. We watching other people become millionaires while they get there and run the football, or while they run the basketball, or while they're acting on stage and whatever. We're watching them become millionaires. In the meantime, we're sleeping. We aren't dreaming. Those guys dreamed, and that's how they became multimillionaires playing ball. Like the lady that Russ spoke about earlier, she was working as a secretary in an office, and her dream was to have her own radio station, her own television station. So we've got to stop sleeping. We've got to dream, and what's within us makes those dreams become a reality. But if you never dream, you can never have a dream come true. So anyway, Russ, we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to say that part, and I'll turn it back over to you.
Oh, no. I really appreciate that. You're so free out of time. Okay. The only thing I could say is that we have to remember people like Mandela, 27 years in the prison, came out to become president of South Africa, the first black man to become president of that country. But he said it like this. He said every day he was in prison, he had a poem that he read to himself. "Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstances, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeoning of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how street the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." Thanks. Back to you, Nate. I appreciate your time.
Okay. We do have Bhavani in Oklahoma. Go ahead, Bhavani.
Hello. Yes. I was wanting to ask what the name of that 1,500-page book is.
What 1,500? Oh, you mean the it's Black History, bh365.org. Go to B as in boy, H as in happy, 365.org. It's Black History, 365. That's the name of that's the title of the book.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Does anybody else have any comments or questions? We're at the top of the hour, but we will entertain a question or comment. Go ahead. If you do, press ** and you can get in your question or comment. Let me see if anybody else, if anybody's unmuted. Okay. Well, we don't have anybody unmuted at this point. So,
Hey, David. Well, David, thanks for your questions, and thank you, Nate, for the time. And listen, I hope somebody catches on and take it to, we're going to pass the baton to the rest of the generation. We've done our run.
Okay, one more question for you. I got you again.
Huh?
Are you still taking your two packs of soul and two packs of core a day? Because you working on your triple 60, right? And you're still running younger than ever.
Yeah, well, I do take soul every day. Soul, core, Ben. I had a soul this morning. I had a core this morning. I had a Ben this morning. I'm going to do it again before the day is over. I had a probiotic. I'm going to send a package to my son who has some, you know, issues, high blood pressure, diabetes, you know, cholesterol. And he's now losing weight, and he's on the product. So, yeah, no question about that. What can I say?
Oh,
the product works.
You're also drinking good water too.
Yeah, absolutely. and thanks to you. I was going to Costco and BJ's and getting my cases of water. Now I do go get that water, but I pour them through your system. And thank you very much for that. Now I'm drinking good water.
All right. All right. Well, thank you, Russ, for being with us, and hopefully you'll be back with us next week. And like I say, you're welcome anytime to bring Jillian with you. But I mean, we just enjoy the conversation.
Okay, I appreciate you. Thank you, and thanks for the time. Thanks,
okay,
David.
You're welcome, younger man.
All right, have a good one.
Okay, have a good day, everyone. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Have a good one. Bye now.
The organizer has ended this meeting. Goodbye.